Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Hey, kids, gather your twigs, your straw, your earthworms. It's time for the Bird Show. Rich Guthrie will be here to answer your birding questions, and it's always a popular program. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. We could be in the middle of a blizzard, and the Rich Guthrie Show is a popular one. So give us a call early, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number, if you want to talk to the very famous Richard P. Guthrie, is 800-348-2551. Rich, your birding questions and some other stuff coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome our avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a reviewer, a regional reviewer, for the premier birding site eBird. He is a former board member of the State Ornithological Association. The man knows his birds. Give us a call if you have a question. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We have a huge stack of email, as a matter of fact. Not sure we'll get to them all, but you can always try. voxpop@wamc.org. The number once again, and we do have a few open lines, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, how have you fared in this latest blizzard?
Hey there, Ray. Good afternoon. Yeah, doing okay. Yeah, just kind of, you know, sequestered here. Nothing new there with this whole corona business behind us, but yep. We're hunkered down and watching out the window, the birds coming and going at the feeders.
That's
good stuff.
That's good. You know, it's funny. We were out back on our patio. We have a little overhang, and we were hanging out right before the snow started to fly for real. And there were several birds. I didn't really see them in the pine tree out back, and they were squawking. And you know, my wife said, they're squawking at you. I said, what do you mean? So I went inside, and sure enough, they all then went to the nest, which is just under our overhang. And I guess these were either the wrens or the phoebes, maybe. I don't know. Whatever takes up residence under our overhang, they wanted in, and they wanted me gone.
Yeah. More than likely, it's the wren, the Carolina wren, because they're happy on porches, and it's too bad they're not too happy with you, though.
Well, I think they're probably pretty good judges of character. You know, we have a stack of email here, and this one came in last night. This is how much Guthrie mania has swept the country. This one is from Dawn in Utica. And Dawn writes, hopefully this email gets to you in time for my favorite show, The Bird Guy. I have been having a great time feeding all kinds of birds this winter. I added a platform feeder for cardinals, etc., and a heated bird bath to attract more birds. Are these two things the reason I have been overtaken by starlings? They are not a delightful bird, and they have taken over. How do I keep them away? And that's from Dawn in Utica.
Well, hi there, Dawn. And, the heated bird bath is certainly an attraction for any bird out there, especially this time of year. Any bird bath, any source of water, is a very important element for a birdscape in the yard. And the starlings are drawn in probably for that. The way to deal with them is to basically change the bird food that might be available to them. They're not too happy with bird seeds. They'll come in, they'll try it out, but then they'll move on. So, and if you have a suet feeder, they're going to love you for that. So if you just kind of make some adjustments there and adjust the bird feeders, and as far as the heated bird bath is concerned, gee, I hate to deprive the other birds of that luxury because the starlings have taken over. They are very skittish, and most other birds will be more tolerant than the starlings are. So if you just make your presence known, they'll fly off rapidly, and with luck, they'll get used to not being there, staying away. So good luck with that.
All right, this one's from Rena, and Rena wrote a couple of hours ago as well. All spring and summer, we tried to attract bluebirds to our backyard with no success. However, we continued to fill one feeder with mealworms in the fall, and suddenly several bluebirds appeared. In fact, they have continued to come to our feeder all winter long. I thought they migrated in winter. Can you explain, where are they living during the winter?
They live here. Most bluebirds do stick around. There are a few migrants that will leave town and return in the spring, but for the most part, they will hang out someplace nearby. They like to find a quiet, sheltered area with a source of food, and it sounds to me like you've provided that opportunity for them. And mealworms, a great source of food supply for the bluebirds and some of the other birds that will come to the feeder.
Okay, this one is the last one we'll do for now from the email, and then we'll intersperse them throughout. This one also came in well over an hour ago, and this is from Pete. And Pete says, for the record, please remind listeners of the estimated loss of songbirds to free-roaming cats. Also, why is there no law against letting cats roam free? Also, please give suggestions as to what we can do about it. And that's from Pete, who is, you know, on the bird side.
On the bird side, as am I. Yes, outdoor cats are a huge problem, and I recommend checking out the American Birding Bird. Let me see now. What is it? ABC, American Birding Conservation.
Okay.
They have a number of informative pages on dealing with outdoor cats and the problem that cats raise with the bird populations. And in some places, they virtually will decimate local bird populations just by sheer numbers. Mm. And so it is a major concern, and one that I'm attuned to. Now, with regard to laws regulating outdoor cats, we regulate the outdoor dogs with licenses and leash laws and the like, uh-huh. but not so much with cats. I mean, it's... I fully endorse. I like cats. I like them very much. I think they're great companions, but they're better off inside than outside.
Okay.
For their own sake and, of course, for the people.
All right. Let's go to the phone, shall we? Grab a couple before the first break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is here to talk birds with you. Peter and Oneonta, you're first.
Yes, thank you so much for taking the call. My wife Eileen and I have a couple backyard bird feeders, and Rich, you just mentioned about heated bird baths, and we're thinking about installing one, and I take it you recommend it, and any resources you can direct us to how to choose one.
Well, almost anyone that I'm familiar with on the market should work fine. You could go to the Wild Birds Unlimited store or similar outdoor bird backyard bird watching place, and they will have some in stock and some recommendations for that. And yes, it seems rather luxurious, but those outdoor bird bath heaters do work. They work well, and the birds love it. They'll love you for it too.
And you recommend it year-round? We have a pond and a stream, but it's all frozen over now, or just for the winter.
I'm not quite sure about a pond. Now, for a pond, if you have the resources, an electrical supply, people use air bubblers in ponds, and that will keep an open pond, pool of water in the frozen pond so that birds can access that. But for the bird heaters, a bird bath would be the recommended way to go about that. Water year-round, a very important element in a backyard birdscape.
And do they have solar power ones, or how do you recommend keeping them heated, heat the water?
Then you would, the main way to do that is with an electric power source, an outdoor extension wire. And again, the folks at the bird specialty shops will be able to advise you on that. And there are some fountains that are solar powered that you can get. They're not very expensive. And I use them in my bird bath during the warmer months when I'm not concerned about freezing. But they don't work well I don't know of any that would work well in the winter months up here.
Peter, thank you very much for the call. Richard Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop, and we'll grab one more here before the first break. Sally in Pelham, Massachusetts. Sally, you're up.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I've been putting up bluebird boxes for over a decade and having great success, two or three clutches a summer. And in the last 2 years, I realized something was starting to kill the baby bluebirds. And after much looking into it and figuring it out and looking for all kinds of different things, I discovered that it was the house wrens. So my question is, do I have to stop putting up bluebird boxes and let it go, or is there some solution to this?
Location is probably the best answer to that. House wrens are, you know, they're delightful little birds in their own right, but they have the nasty habit of not tolerating nearby neighbors of any sort. And unfortunately, they're quite aggressive when it comes to that. You can check out the New York State Bluebird Society. They have a wonderful source of information about bluebird nest boxes and problems with other birds in nest boxes, such as the wrens, as you speak, or the house sparrows, or starlings. And they are at nysbs.org, New York State Bluebird Society. And I recommend checking out their website. They have pages of information that you'll find very useful with regard to
Go ahead, Sam.
I'm sure
go ahead.
It's house wrens and not house sparrows. And I think I did look, and there was not much anybody could recommend because they're so small they can get into the different kinds of protectors and things like that that you can put on the box. You know, I guess the question is, if I can't find a way to do that, are the wrens always going to win? Like, for some reason, they've been more successful the last couple of years than they were in the number of years before that. I don't know if it's more inexperienced bluebird parents or if the wrens are just always going to win and I shouldn't attract the bluebirds that way.
A combination of both. And I, again, the location of the bluebird nest box, if it's away from shrubbery that the wrens like. The wrens will not venture far out into open area. So if
it is in the middle of a small field, but they're building their little dummy nests in the boxes.
Even
it's away
from
brush, but yeah.
Really? Well, it sounds to me like you have a very, not aggressive, but energetic house wren there, which is kind of their nature. And so the solution may be a timeout on the bluebird nest boxes. You certainly don't want to invite them in for impending tragedies, that's for sure.
All right, Sally, we got to take a break here. We are overdue. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Oh, yeah, it's birds. And, boy, we're just getting started. More birds to come. Sorry for the delay. It's heating problems in Studio 8. It's about 97 degrees. I lost consciousness for a minute. Ah, good thing Sonny Rollins was on, and things are okay now. It's the Bird Show, and Rich Guthrie is here. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joan. Oh, hello, Joan in Schenectady. You're on.
Thanks so much. Gentlemen, it's good to be talking with you today.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks. Rich, I'm hoping you can help me with more of a human thing than a bird thing, but I think you can help. My upstairs neighbor has been helping me learn to feed just an enormous variety of birds, different seeds from thistle all the way up to the mealyworms and everything. We have, in my mind, a lovely balanced backyard community. Everything from your intro, from worms all the way up to several different kinds of raptors. I love hawks. My friend, not so much. Does she love the hawks? So give me, if you could, share with me some great information that I could continue to share as to why the presence of everything from like a couple Merlins up to a resident red tail and occasional visits from the Cooper's Hawk. I can think of so many good things to say. Can you help me with some more?
Well, I say yay and good for you. Hawks are part of our natural environment out there, and they will cruise, and some of our hawks have adapted very well to city environments. And as you mentioned, the Merlin and the Cooper's Hawk and the Red-tailed Hawk all do very well in some of our urban environments. And while they're out and about, you know, it's part of the naturescape that we have to be familiar with. I admire hawks for the way they are, and sometimes, yeah, you know, you have to take a pause when it comes to backyard bird feeding. If there's a hawk that's kind of like honed in on your station, they need to learn to move on, and you know, the birds will, yes, take care of themselves in the meantime. And then you can resume feeding when the hawks have decided that there are better, greener pastures someplace else. So there is a North American Hawk Migration Association that you can learn from them some things about different hawk movements and the like. And aside from that, all I can say is an inherent intrinsic beauty in the hawks, and they deserve our appreciation.
They sure do.
So.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Okay. Well, thanks very much for letting me bring it up. Thank you.
Thanks, Joan. Have a great one. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. This one is from John in Connecticut. John says, this is a fun show. Well, he wrote that before the show, so I hope we don't let you down. John writes, I put an artificial olive tree on my balcony a few years ago. This past year, a family of what I believe are finches have used it. In nicer weather, I hear them return at dusk, and they talk loudly. A few questions. Is an artificial tree okay for them? Also, I don't want to disturb them, but feel I cannot use the balcony now. Are they fine with my presence? Not to mention I have to sweep bird poop that collects. How can I encourage them to leave if I would need or want to? And that's from John in Connecticut.
Well, the what you're dealing with is probably house finches. Wonderful little songbirds. The male has a little rosy patch on the head and the breast. The female is a brown striped bird that will quietly hang out in the neighborhood. The artificial tree is not a problem. You know, they'll mistake it for a real tree. They're not really looking for a real tree. They're looking for any place where they can put their nest. And they'll use hanging flower pots or Christmas wreaths that are left on the door and the like. For the they will get along fine with you there. They'll sort of become accustomed to your presence and tolerate you. And I think there's kind of like an agreement that they regard you as a protector of some sort. You're going to keep some of the other predators away from them. But if you really want to discourage them, I would either take the artificial tree inside for a while, or you could probably put a cloth cover over it for a short period of time. That would discourage them from coming back. And then, you know, a cheesecloth or a soft towel or blanket or something, or sheet, just for the time being. You know, it probably won't look to your aesthetic appeal, but on the other hand, what you want to work on is a way of discouraging. I would encourage them. They have a beautiful song. In fact, they're starting to sing now. They're a bird of the Southwest, where it is turning spring as we speak, and they're going to be bursting into song with a wonderful song that's so helpful at this time of year.
What's the song sound like, Uncle Rich?
It's a musical wobble, it's a string of wobbly notes that are just so cheerful and musical in their sound. And one thing about them is that they're kind of a city bird, an urban bird, and a suburban bird. They like backyards, they like porches, and they also like the shrubbery around urban buildings.
Yeah.
And so you can hear them in the canyons of the city singing away in January. What a nice sound.
But you won't do the sound, huh?
Oh, I couldn't come near it.
Nice.
It's a sweet sound. You can go to All About Birds at Cornell University website, And there you can hear the recording of the House Finch song.
You know, I know I can do that, but it's more fun when you do that.
I can't come near it. I can do you an owl. I can do you a dog.
All right, well,
hang on. Do you a duck.
Hold that owl just for a moment. This is from Ben in Gilderland. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. Ben writes, sometime in mid to late November, it was a little before 5 a.m., and I was just arriving on the roof of the Albany Med parking garage. I saw this huge white flapping thing fly past my car and land on a brick wall, and I couldn't believe my eyes, but it was a snowy owl. First of all, I was really surprised by how big he was, but I was also surprised to see him in Albany. Do we get snowy owls around here? I would have thought they would live much farther north. And what could he be doing in such an urban area when there's mountains and woods barely 7 miles away? That's from Ben in Gilderland. Now, answer the question and then make that great snowy owl sound.
Okay, well, we'll do the first part there. The snowy owl does live in the Arctic. And on occasion, they will come down in to the northern states. And to them, the city is just another mountainous canyon area for them. They're not familiar with people and cars and all that. They're just as at home in the city as they are in the countryside. They just love them some pigeons every now and then. So nice. They're drawn in for a number of reasons. This year is not a big year for snowy owls. There are a few around, but not very many. That could change if the weather continues on a harsh side for the next few weeks, but then they'll turn around and head back up. But they're usually found in the open, at the airports or golf courses or vast stretches of open areas, grasslands and pastures. But they don't mind being in the city with buildings. Now, as far as the sound is concerned, a disappointment there, Ray, because the snowy owl is not like our typical hoot owls. They're kind of like a squawk owl. They don't make any lovely, romantic sounds hooting away in the night. They just kind of like bark, and that's it. They don't go much further than that.
You are a wet blanket today. You won't do any sounds for me today, Rich. What happened?
Just keep trying to come up with the right number. Yes.
You know what? It's like dealing with Pavarotti or something. We got to have all the conditions just right for you to sing. Let's go to Nina in East Hoosick. Nina, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, Ray. Nice to talk to you and Rich. Hi. I wanted to ask you about setting up bird feeding stations. You know, I need to start from scratch here. I'd like to attract a wide variety of birds, cardinals, jays, the smaller birds that you've talked about. And I wondered if you could help me with telling me what kind of food I need and what kind of feeders I need, platform and so forth. I heard you mentioning I don't really know exactly what that is, hanging feeders. Could you help me with that, please?
Well, certainly. The first thing I would suggest is stay away from the junk food that you'll find so often in the hardware store or in a supermarket that has a lot of that red millet seed in there. The birds will just ignore that and make a mess of it on the ground beneath the feeder. And it will go untouched. A variety of different bird seeds, such as black oil sunflower seed and cracked corn, and thistle seed and suet are the ones that I would recommend off the bat. You could get into some of the millets and the like, but those should work for most of the bird species that you like to have around. Then the different feeders, well, the platform feeder is the easiest. That can be simply spreading cracked corn on the ground or a tray that's set up on a pole or hanging from a branch from a tree. The other ones are tube feeders that the goldfinches and siskins might like. There's a wide variety, and in the summertime, don't forget the hummingbird feeders. So you want to include that as well. Stop by a good hardware store or the backyard bird feeding place, Wild Birds Unlimited, and see what they have in stock. And just kind of window shop and ask and sort of out what your desires are, and they can help you with what would be best for your situation. So I would start keeping
it simple.
Thank
you. The one problem that I had, a long time ago I did bird feeding, but I didn't remember, that's why I was asking you. But the squirrels, I finally got the one thing I have left over from that time is, a kind of bird feeder that has almost, it's like protected with, fine, you could say bars.
Yeah.
Squirrels can't get into it. But when you start to do the platform feeding, I think it's going to become a squirrel feeding station.
Well, there are baffles that you could put up. Either if you're suspending a feeder from a tree, you could put a baffle on top. Or from a pole, you can use, there's a number of suggestions for keeping squirrels from getting up the pole. So there are options, there are ways of coping with squirrels. But, they'll come around and look for spillage on the ground or the like. Any of the bird feeders will have, the ones you want will have ones that have metal braces around the openings so that they can't gnaw away at the openings. So you want to be careful about that. Again,
I've seen them chew through plastic. It's very impressive.
Yes.
Yes, right.
So thank you very much. Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, good luck with that, and keep us posted.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number to call, and Ann is in Red Hook. Hello, Ann.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I'm appreciating hearing everyone's questions and responses. I'm learning so much. My first question is, early this week, before the snow started, I, much to my surprise, discovered a red-tailed hawk in one of my bushes. My bird feeder is right out my kitchen window, and it dove at the little birds. I have a bird feeder. I do use that high-quality sunflower feed, and I've had a cardinal pair in my yard for a long time and some other little birds. I'm not good at identifying them. But since that hawk dove at the little birds, they have disappeared.
Hmm.
And ordinarily, I would be filling up my feeders just about every day, and they've just been sitting there full. And I know it's been snowing, but I'm wondering if they're going to come back.
They'll come back. I'm surprised that a red-tailed hawk would go after the birds at your feeder.
I was shocked. I'd never seen. I live in a village. I don't have a very big yard. I was shocked to see that bird. And, I mean, it was close enough that I could see that's exactly what it was. And the birds, there are some bushes across from the feeder just a little ways away, and they tend to sit in there and go back and forth between the feeder and the bush. And regarding your other caller, I did install one of those baffles, and I have a crew of very determined squirrels, and they have not figured out how to get.
Oh, that's good news. That's great.
There you go. There it works. Birds are used to having hawks around the neighborhood. You know, there's kind of a sense of when a hawk is hungry, they know it. And I'm surprised, again, that a red-tailed hawk would bother with birds. They're not very good at that. They're not fast. They're not agile. And birds are a lot quicker than they are. There might have been a mouse in the neighborhood that he was after.
No.
Maybe. Absolutely. My other question was, I read this year that Christmas trees are very helpful to birds and other animals in the yard.
Yeah.
So you take your natural Christmas tree, instead of putting it to the curb to be picked up, you put it somewhere in your backyard. And
it's
supposed to be very helpful to birds. And I was wondering, I have locations in my yard that have lots of other bushes and then some locations that are kind of bare. And I was wondering if you could give me some advice. It's just the tree is sitting behind the garage now, but I mean, if there's a better location for it, I'm all for helping the birds in the winter.
Yeah.
Well, by all means. In fact, that's a recommended use for Christmas trees for the interim. After a while, you do want to maybe move them out, but for right now, they provide excellent shelter, a natural shelter for the birds to retreat to if there is just to get out of the wind or to evade a hawk or a cat or an owl or what have you. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity to use a tree before you recycle it for compost or what have you. So I highly recommend that idea. Now, filling a gap between shrubbery would be a perfect place for one. And it hardly matters where you put it. The birds will find it and use it. So
okay.
Work with that.
Well, Ann, thanks a lot. Quickly, let's go over to Linda in Canaan before we take our next break. Hiya, Linda. You're up.
Okay. Thank you. Do I need to turn my phone? No, I can't turn my phone off because then you won't hear me.
Well, you could try.
You can hear me.
Okay, yes.
This is just to lighten your day a little bit.
Okay.
And just to give a little context. Ray, correct? Ray, you opened up by saying the word boyd.
Oh, the boyds, yeah.
So here's a little poem for you, which I don't know if you've heard, and I'd love to know if you have.
All right.
Doity, doity boyds, a-sittin' on a coib, a-choipin' and a-boipin', and a-eatin' doity boyds.
No, I got to say, I've never heard. Where is that from, Linda?
I come from upstate New York.
So do I.
I think my father.
Yeah, it was
yeah,
your
well,
that's
Ithaca.
I'll be darned.
That's a nice one. I wish I had written it down. Send me a copy, email it to me. I'd love to use that sometime.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. Linda.
Yeah, my guess. Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda. You want to finish up?
Oh, no. That was it. Except, you know, I will say I have two cats, they both go outdoors. One of them loves to catch mice, but they're indoors, the mice, and they never go after birds. So
there
I think, I don't know, it's a little problematic. I think in an urban area, you might be able to get away with that, but, I don't think it's fair to, you know, cause as I said, my little hunter guy here, he's never gone after birds.
Hmm. Well, Linda, we're going to take
a break. I don't know. He's too lazy.
Yeah, most cats, if they hit a point, they're like, forget it. Let's take a break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. You know, there's a great poem from Steve Martin. I think A Man with Two Brains. Pointy birds, pointy, pointy, anoint my head, anointy, anointy. That was a good one. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop. It's birds. Rich Guthrie is here. The number is 800-348-2551. I tell you what, Rich, are there any events you want to discuss really quickly before we move on here?
Well, the local bird clubs are beginning to open up and engage in field trips again. I recommend that you contact each of them in your neighborhood. You can go to the New York Ornithological Association for a list of local bird clubs in the area for New York State. And Mass Audubon has a listing of different clubs that you can find out there. And go to their sites because they are beginning to have some field trips. They are still using limitations imposed by COVID-19 restrictions as to number and level of engagement and the like. But yes, now's the time to get out. Spring is just around the corner. We got another 2 weeks, and the red-winged blackbirds will be back, and
yes.
The birds will be beginning to migrate north. We have eagles and owls nesting now. It's a great time to start getting on involved with the New York Atlas Project, and you can do that with nybirds.org, and look for the Atlas Project. The eagles and owls and some other birds will be starting to their courtship and nesting as we speak. Hmm. So there's lots of things going on out there that are ready and waiting for people to watch.
Cool. I tell you are so popular that we have so many calls and so many emails. I'm going to try to balance them. I know we won't get to everybody, but we're going to try. We had a nice picture sent from regular correspondent Kim in Pittsfield. Beautiful bluebirds, and I didn't realize that the bluebirds, they almost have an orange breast like a robin.
They do,
yeah,
yes.
Very
red,
impressive.
Red, white, and blue.
You can't see
colorful
that
bird.
On the radio, but it's a nice picture. Thank you for that one, Kim. Roberta from Salisbury, Connecticut writes, we have a great variety of birds at our feeders, and a couple of weeks ago, a newcomer arrived. A lone Carolina wren is now a frequent visitor. Is it common for a bird to be all by itself without partners?
Yes, exploring males will wander and venture forth into new territory and hope to attract a mate along the way. So any day now he'll start singing his heart out and hoping that that she will come by and like the area just as well.
All right, this one is from Anna in Goshen, Massachusetts, and another one about wrens. For the first time in 20 years, there are two pudgy brown birds we've identified as Carolina wrens. There are stripes at our feeder. Given the name, is it possible they're here in a hill town of western Massachusetts?
Yes, the Carolina wren is a newcomer to our neighborhoods within the last couple of decades. And they are, as the name suggests, a southern bird species. But like the cardinal and the mockingbird and the titmouse, as one of those many birds whose parade north has begun, and they're slowly making their way further north as they go along. So harsh winters take their toll, but the adventurous ones manage, and they bring the population along with them. So now Carolina wrens can be a familiar backyard bird in much of our listening area.
All right, one more email, and then we'll go back to the phones, and if we have time, we'll get a few more email in later on. This one is from Joe. Joe says, I read in a study that Western bluebirds appear to form monogamous relationships every year, but in genetic studies, 45% of the nests had young that were not fathered by the male partner. My faith is shattered. What gives? Heartbroken in Hageman. That's Joe. What do you think?
Well, it's nature. It happens. And not often, but, well, I shouldn't say that. It happens quite often, but with limited birds are, you know, they're out there and they're opportunistic. They'll take advantage of a situation when they can, and that's how it works. But most of the time, you're going to find monogamy, at least for the season. Males will defend their territory, and some females will be very selective and not venture out of the territory. So they're very, you know, monogamy is a kind of a, not necessarily a thing with the birds.
So what season is the monogamy season?
What season?
Yeah.
Springtime?
Right,
springtime, nesting season.
All right, fair enough.
This time of year, they're roaming around, and everybody is kind of like out there having a winter party.
All right, what do you say we go back to the phones, and I believe we say your name, Drea and Troy. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You're on. Hello.
Hi. I have an upstairs neighbor who has a number of bird feeders, and she has a lot of birds coming to her feeder. I have a couple of bird feeders that are hanging directly below where her bird feeders are. She puts her feeders out on a deck. So I have some bird feeders directly below hers. Not a single bird, not even a squirrel, has come to this, to these feeders. One of them is a suet feeder, and the other one is like a seed feeder. So what can I do to it? And there are birds around. There are birds up at her feeder all the time. What can I do to attract the birds? I guess they just don't know that it's there. How can I attract birds to these feeders?
Well, I'm going to suggest it's either the type or the quality of the seed that you're offering out there. And I don't know the difference between the two, that one is working, one is not. I'm going to say it's the type of seed that you may be offering. And might switch to...
Well,
go ahead.
One of them is suet. It's I even got a fancy suet with mealyworms in it.
Mm-hmm. That should work, but it depends on the bird species. Suet feeders attract woodpeckers, nuthatches, chickadees, and a few other bird species. And it's the seed that attracts the rest of that crowd. So it's probably just a matter of time before someone discovers it. And once they do, they'll like it. Unless, I can't imagine the suet will have gone bad. It rarely ever goes rancid or anything like that. So I would suggest that it's just a matter of patience, that they'll soon enough they'll find it.
Okay. All right. And I have some quinoa in the seed feeder. I had read somewhere that quinoa is a nutritional seed for the, well, it's not actually a seed. Is that good or bad to have in a bird feeder?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll rely on what they said online then. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, I'll have to go look it up. I never heard of it, And my suspicion is that it's probably because it's not popular, and it's probably not something that works. I would stick to the standard stuff, the proven success, and that is typical sunflower seed and the higher quality the bird seeds, not the red millet or anything like that.
All right.
Right, right. I have used the black oil sunflower before. Mm. Quinoa, incidentally, is spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A, if you want to look it up and see what that's
about. It's something we discuss from time to time on Food Friday, Rich, but not very often here on the Bird Show. So, Drea, thanks a lot for the call. We go now to Nancy and Rhinebeck. Nancy, you're on. Oh, boy. Nancy, are you listening on your phone or on the radio, honey? Hello, Nancy. I hear us talking on the radio. Oh, God. You're destroying my will to live. You wait all that time, and then you don't. Oh, let's go to Phil in South Hadley. Phil.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for the call. Sure. My wife and I have fed the birds in our backyard for years and years, and we now have bears that come by springtime and knock the feeders over. And Rich, I was wondering if you had any alternative ideas on how to feed the birds and discourage the bears. I know that's a tough one. Go ahead. I'm sorry, and I'm gonna hang up. But my last. Well, go ahead. I'll let you go.
Well, hang in there.
Well, I'm glad to hear what you have to say, but you definitely don't want to have bears around your bird feeder. Definitely not. In fact, it is it can be illegal to be feeding, put a bird feeder out if there are bears in the neighborhood. Right now, it's wintertime. You don't have to worry about that. But if you have a suspended bird feeder, one that you can hang from, let's say, a clothesline or a wire, that's out of reach of the bears, and one that will not produce spillage on the ground. No food, no bears. I mean, they're going to look for a place for food. They find food, they're going to be there. So, a ground feeder
that's
will
why
not
we
work
had
if there are bears.
Sure, that's why we had stopped, because it is. You know, we were aware that it's illegal. Real quick question: would you put the feeders up, say, at the end, late November, early September, when the bears are beginning to hibernate, and then feed the birds through the winter and then take them down in the springtime?
That's a procedure that would work. You want to maybe a little later into the season, depending on the local weather, because bears, before they go into hibernation, are really looking around for any source of food, and they're more anxious to load up on nutrients for the winter. And November could still be warm enough for them to be out and about, and sometimes even into December, depending on local weather conditions. And and during the spring, when the bears come out, again, it's a matter of keeping the food away from where they can get it. Or as some people will put food out during the day and bring it in at night. That works until the bears discover that trick.
Mm. Phil, well, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Donna in Wappingers Falls. Hello there, Donna.
Hi. Last spring we got to watch a barred owl and the babies. And it's really wonderful, and I'm hoping that you say they might come back to the same place.
Very likely, yes. What works for them, they'll want to work it again. And down there in Wappingers, I know the folks at the Waterman Bird Club will be glad to hear about that. If you're familiar with them in the Dutchess County, New York area, the Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club.
Is that the one that you go down by the water? Oh, no, that's someplace else. We went to see eagles.
Oh. Right. But this
also,
is an organization.
Waterman, okay. I just noticed yesterday that I haven't seen squirrels around in a couple of weeks.
Oh, my God.
You think we got maybe the hawk is stocking up and eating them.
Okay.
I doubt it. They've just moved on to better fixings someplace, I can imagine. No shortage of squirrels around here, that's for sure.
Huh.
Be here.
Oh, you know, come to think of it, Donna, strange. I haven't seen too many squirrels in my backyard either. So maybe.
I wouldn't read too much into it. I think it's just a local phenomenon.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's see quickly now to who has been waiting the longest. Sharon Springs. Anne, you're in Sharon Springs. You're on.
Yes. Hi. Hi, Rich. I think all the squirrels are coming to my yard, so don't worry about it.
All right.
We have a pole feeder, which is fairly high with some pulley systems. You know, it's kind of awkward. But the complete 100% effective squirrel repellent is three sections of stovepipe and up the pole. And if you want to paint it or you want to, you know, decorate it, that's fine. But that works. They've never gotten to the feeder. So it's very effective.
And that works. That's one of the proven baffles for squirrels, a stovepipe. And
yes.
And they're very clever. If they can find a way to leap from a branch onto the feeder, they will do that. But if it's out of reach of that, then you're in good shape.
Yes. Very.
Well, Ann, thank you very much. Tell you what, we have a couple of minutes here. We'll go to April in East Hartford. You're on.
Hi, I'm in East Heartland.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I have a hermit thrush. That's okay. I have a hermit thrush that's come into the backyard. It's not my home. It's my mom's home. But she's got water that she pumps from the basement, and it pops out of the lawn. And it keeps coming into the lawn, and I don't know what to do with him. I don't think he's supposed to be here this time of year.
Well, hermit thrushes are one of those that a few of them will linger longer into the winter and make it through the winter. It's if a good sheltered area with some food available, and as you say, that a hermit thrush can overwinter in our area. Very, very few do, but some will.
Okay, April, thank you very much. We're almost done here with the program. This one from Linda. And Linda writes, I have a suet feeder and a seed feeder. I also throw out miscellaneous nuts and seeds, etc. This year I'm inundated with starlings. They're hogs and scare other smaller birds and woodpeckers. Is there any way to discourage them? And that's from Linda. We have about 40 seconds here, Rich.
It's all about the food type and availability. If you change the food type, more restricted to the songbirds, the sparrows, and the finches, the starlings will look for someplace else.
That's all there is to it, huh?
Yep.
We had
it's all about food.
Several people write in to say quinoa is a South American grain, which it is, and it's perhaps not familiar with our winter birds, so maybe they just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I would stick to the stuff that works.
Yeah, okay. Well, Richard P. Guthrie, how do people get in contact with you if they want to send you pictures and such?
Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
And how do we
email address?
How do we spell Guthrie?
Richard P. as in Peter, Guthrie.
All right. Well, thank you, sir, and appreciate you being here. And we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Very nice, Ray.
Have a good one. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 20 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Stavros, helping people with disabilities to work toward their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Well, once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for joining us. Once again, many apologies to the many of you who didn't get through today. We tried to move it as quickly as we could, but there's always a lot of folks left on the line and a huge stack of email we didn't get to. We'll try to do it next time, and Rich will be back soon, that is for sure. Thanks again for being with us today. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Carl Blackwood answered the calls today. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, we look heavenward, and we discuss astronomy with Dr. Valerie Rapson. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Hope you join us. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.